Everybody, my name is Stevie B, and I'm a recovering alcoholic and a proud member of the West Side Men's Group.
Nice.
It's great to be here with you guys tonight. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It feels like I haven't seen you guys since last year. All right, I'm just going to use that once. Thank you. Are we keeping both doors open? Is that what we're doing? Okay, well, we'll see what happens. I start to melt halfway through, so if I'm not here, just come and get me. No, we'll be okay. Well, if you're here for the first time tonight, we're on the fourth step. We've been doing the third step for 4 weeks, actually. So you came in at a perfect time. We're going to be talking about making a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And usually that sounds like a step that just is, I mean, just think about it. Just think about what it says. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. There's no juice in that. Nobody likes that. Nobody got excited when I said we were on the fourth step. There was some ahs and ohs in the back. Because there's not God in that step. There's no sought through prayer and meditation. There's no excitement, and no one likes to think about morals. We certainly want to know and think about writing them down or telling anybody else about it. So it's a step that is usually painted with a brush of, ooh. When people talk about when you're doing the fourth step, it's like, ooh. Come in anytime, Todd. Just help work yourself. And I want to tell you, there's nothing ooh about the fourth step. There's nothing mysterious. There's nothing scary about it. There's nothing where when you're doing it, people are going to have to pull you aside outside the meeting and talk to you about it. It's just one of the 12 steps. Now, it is an important step. In the 12 and 12, it has so much importance that it's written about more than any of the other steps of the 12, other than the 12th step. Because the 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of working these steps, we carry these principles and we carry this message to alcoholics, and that's, of course, what we live on. What we live on. So they wrote about 15 to 17 pages on the 12th step. And looking around the room, there's a lot of people that I've been following for a long time that I know that work the 12th step. But in order to work the 12th step, you have to do a searching and fearless moral inventory. And we don't want to hear about that. We don't want to hear about searching and fearless moral inventories. We want to hear about just staying sober. How you doing? I'm staying sober. How you doing? Hanging in there. Hanging in there, meeting to meeting, going to meeting, go to the meetings. We don't want to hear about the searching and fearless moral inventory. But if someone said to us that by doing a searching and fearless moral inventory, this is the last time that you need to come back. If someone said to us you can have a life beyond your wildest dreams. If someone said to you that your wife would be restored to you, your husband would be restored to you, you would have a new life beyond your wildest dreams, not the same old life, that your old ideas would be exchanged for new. If someone painted it like that, we'd be signing up, wouldn't we? We'll be like, where can we do that searching and fearless moral inventory? But nobody says it like that. But those of us that have done it, we know that as we walk out of the fifth step, if we do it with a great sponsor or a great mentor or a great spiritual guide, we know that the magic that happens in the fourth and fifth cannot be overlooked. And looking around the room, I know there's a lot of people that agree with me. So why is it that we make it so almost unattainable to the newcomer? Is it because it was painful for us? I'm not sure. I know I was in a fraternity, and we had this thing called Hell Week. The Hell Week was the last week of our pledging program, which means for 5 or 6 or 7 weeks, whatever it was during the pledging program, it was tough. It was real tough. I joined a fraternity that was the toughest pledging program other than this one fraternity that was the Omega Psi Phi's. They used to brand themselves at the end of their pledge program. They used to take a big branding iron, put it in the fire, and brand themselves. I didn't join that one. It was an old black fraternity, but I didn't join that anyway. They branded themselves. That was a tough fraternity. But the second toughest fraternity on the campus was Teak, Tau Kappa Epsilon. That's the one that I went for. Because I wanted people to see me out there on the quad, which is where everyone meets, and I want them to see me being marched and thrown into the mud and humiliated because I felt that if the more I was humiliated in public, the more that it would be mean a lot to me. But there was one week that nobody spoke about during that week, and that was Hell Week. So when you go to the brothers and you say to them, when is Hell Week? They go, whoa, 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 whoa. Don't get ahead of yourself, Steve. Maybe you're not going to make it through Hell Week. And they used to paint this big, scary picture around this Hell Week. And that's the same thing we do in the four step. You know, immediately we come in, and if you saw that movie Clean and Sober with who is in that movie?
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton. You know, the first meeting that he's having with his sponsor and he's drinking milkshakes, he's already doing the four-step inventory. So when I came into the program, I thought it was immediate. I had seen Clean and Sober in treatment. I figured the program was take the first step, drink two milkshakes, and do the four-step. That's what it seemed like to me. So I figured I was going to just get into this real fast. And I found out after being in a treatment for 28 days that they wouldn't even let you delve into the four step. They actually even made it even scarier in treatment. They're like, no, this is a 1-2-3 treatment center. Four is when you get out. You know, there's a bit, when you get out. You'll be getting a sponsor for that. So let me tell you, and my second sponsor is sitting over here, right here in the first row, so he'll tell you that it took me 2 years to even start writing it down. Because I didn't, first of all, I came into the program when I was 22 years old. I stayed sober a year and a half. I was in Minnesota. I had no intention. Justin said it beautifully last night. He came down here when he was 19. He had no intention of staying, and he had no intention of being sober 3.5 years later. But he did have an intention for the nightmare of his drugs and alcohol to stop. And that's all I did. When I went to Minnesota, when my parents shipped me out to Minnesota, my intention was just to stop the nightmare, but not to be in a lifelong in-program type of thing. I mean, I never even heard of anybody in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, let alone me joining up for a lifetime. But I wanted the madness to stop. So when I was in the treatment program and they said that you'll be doing a four-step, I thought, you know, I'll get around to it. I mean, if I stay. You know, kind of like having a personal trainer when you get to the gym. That's not something you sign up for the first day. That's something you might work yourself into. You know, I want to try some treadmill, you know, a little bit of water aerobics. And then if I decide to stay, maybe I'll get myself a personal trainer. And that was the same thing that I felt about the four step. I didn't come for the four step. I didn't come for moral inventory. I had no interest in taking a moral inventory. And if you're of that belief system, if you feel that the program is just about staying sober, you could stay sober on the first step alone. It'll help you to have the first step and the 12th step. Because in order for us to keep it, we have to give it away. And you could stay sober on those two steps. Let me tell you, the reason I know that is a bunch of people that do that. They do that. They do the first step and the 12th step. And they walk around, instead of going from glory to glory, they're going from drama to drama. They always have some type of drama brewing. And God forbid you would ask them how they're doing, or they're going to tell you how they're doing. You gotta have a half an hour for those drama to drama people. 26 years. Let me tell you how I'm doing. They're sitting right out there right now, just telling people how they're doing. But in the fourth step, we make a decision if we're really in or if we're playing a game. Right, Richie? If we're playing a game. We're either really in or if we're playing a game. And you know how you know if you're really in? You know how you know if you're taking a third step? You'll have a pen in your hand. If you've taken a thorough third step, if you made a decision to have God run your life, if you made a decision to turn your life and your will over to God, that when you get finished with the third step and you just did the prayer, what are you going to have in your hand? You're going to have a pen in your hand. You're going to have a notebook. You're going to have a big book. You're going to have a 12 and 12, and you're going to get busy. That's how you're going to know if you took a thorough third step. It's going to be easy to be able to tell. You're going to be easy to be able to see if you're in. Month goes by, 2 months go by, 3 months go by, you're not even thinking about it. Your sponsor's mentioning it too. You're like, well, you know, I have a lot of stuff. I don't want to bring up a lot of issues. Because I've been through a lot, I have a lot of issues. Then the next time you see him, you know, we're speaking over at Bark. We have the Tuesday morning, 10 a.m. commitment. You see him at Bark again. See them a year down the road. You guys know what I'm talking about. You've seen the people. They're great people. They're our friends. They've been with us a long time. You see them the next month, next year. How you doing? Well, I'm just coming back. Let me tell you something. We need to be talking about our issues. We need to be laying them down with another human being and with God. We need to lay them out. Because if you're walking around with your issues, it's all about you. It's all about you and your stuff. And you don't want to be walking around with your own stuff. You want to be able to share it and let it go. But in order to do that, in the fifth step, you have to know how to take an inventory. And that's as simple as it is. It doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. I'm sure you have a closet in your house or your halfway house or you've been involved where there's a closet and sometimes there's clothes in there. I mean, of course, when you're not using. There's clothes in your closet. If you come from up north, like I do, during the seasons, you have to go into your closet. I mean, unless you have a big house. I had a small closet. I mean, no disrespect, Mom and Dad, but the closet was not big. And coming into the spring, what? You walk into the closet. You got all these. I'm from New York. You got all these big jackets. Down jacket was a big deal when I was a kid. Down, super down. You know, you got your arms are in there. You're an entire jacket, the whole thing. It's a 75-pound jacket with no human being in there. Giant jacket. Goose down. Canadian goose down. We'd like that. Canadian goose down. You got those giant jackets that just stand like this. But in order to get into your summer stuff, you got to take an inventory of your winter stuff. You got to clear out the closet to bring in the new stuff. You can't have a whole closet full of winter things if summer's coming. And that's all an inventory is. You walk into the closet, looking around, you think these things are good. You got a scarf from the 70s, that needs to go. You got your Z Cavaricci from the 80s, that needs to go. You know what I'm talking about, that needs to go. Funny because I just ran into my Z Cavaricci's a couple months ago and I didn't want to let him go. You walk into your closet, you assess what's there, even the stuff that you thought was good, but you bring another person into that closet with you, your sponsor or a priest or a rabbi or a mentor, someone that's been in the program, you bring him in the closet with you. And you bring him in there because you think that stuff needs to be saved. You have lust and anger and wrath. Your seven deadlies on the shelves. You're looking at that, but that's pride. I need to keep that pride. I need to keep all that stuff. We were just talking about that earlier, and a gentleman was talking about how he doesn't get involved in that kind of stuff because we have to be very careful with pride. Pride is the one thing that'll take you out faster than anything else because behind pride is most of the defects of character. Once you get prideful, then you get angry. Once you get prideful, then you get short-tempered. Once you get prideful, then you don't have patience. Everything that follows pride is not good. That's why the Bible says that the fall comes after the pride. We want to try to stay away from pride. We want to keep surrendering pride. Anytime we think that we've arrived, we want to make sure that we know that the only thing we've done has been we've left, but we haven't arrived. Anyone in here has arrived, that's dangerous. No one in here has arrived. No one in here has a better seat. The biggest thing that you could become in Alcoholics Anonymous is a member. I think Jimmy said that this week. Just a member. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no president of AA. Anybody that I've ever seen become big shot in AA, they just get one shot and then they're all shot. And I didn't make that up. That was Bob from Boston. One shot, we're all shot. Anytime we get big headed. So we walk into that closet with a sponsor, a mentor, a priest, a rabbi. And we walk in there and we see all these things and we start to write them down. We're not sure if we're going to get rid of them yet, but we're at least going to write them down. We're going to write them down. And we're going to write our defects of character, and we're going to start with the ones that are called resentments, the re-feelings. Like if I'm walking down the street and I see Mark E, and something bad comes over me, and something bad feeling, and I have to walk to the other side of the street, that's a resentment. If when you mention someone's name to me, I bristle with antagonism, that's a resentment. If you start talking to me about the police, and I go like that, that's a resentment. And the big book says that these are real. Listen to this. I want you to hear this. These are real or imagined. Okay, Sandy, it doesn't have to be real. It could be imagined. Okay? One guy was telling me a couple weeks ago that he didn't want to come to this meeting because he felt that there was somebody here that had a serious resentment against him. Now, I'm not sure if that was real or imagined, but either way, that needs to go down on a piece of paper. And I had a lot of them. You know what? I still have a lot of them. When it comes around Christmas time, and Christmas cards, and high school things. I have a lot of stuff that centers around that. Because really what I want to be doing is I want to be writing 1,000 Christmas cards. But really what usually happens is I write 3. And then I think about the 977 that I would have written. And so that, or 997 that I would have written. And so it makes me feel less than. My mom told me something this year, which is amazing. She said, why don't you start in August? You can't write 700 Christmas cards in the December 26th. You can't do it. I never thought of that. Start early. Wow, what a concept. I always hate Christmas shopping too. I just feel it's a lot of stress. She goes, when do you shop? I say, Christmas Eve. There's a lot of stress Christmas Eve. So I wanted to try starting earlier. So anyway, I don't want to digress. So we write down the stuff that we're resentful for. Institutions, people, ideas, political organizations, whatever it is. Anything that makes you, when you're at a dinner table and people bring up that, write it down. Next time someone mentions President Bush or President Obama, you should be totally neutral on it. You should be fine with it. If you're not fine with it, if it just makes you go crazy, write it down. I mean, why would you want to be walking around with burdens? Why would you want to be bristling with antagonism for anything? Religion, politics, police departments, fathers, mothers, the whole deal. Now, are you going to be able to get rid of all that kind of stuff in the fifth step? I don't know. That's not up to us. But you're certainly going to need to be writing it down. The next thing we're going to be writing down is fears. Guess what fears are? Real or imagined? Now, I have a terrible, terrible phobia, which means it's a fear that has no founding in fact of heights. As soon as I start walking up a flight of stairs outside, or if I walk up a tower or something like that, I feel I'm going to fall. If I'm on a mountain, even though I can ski down the mountain, if I walk up the mountain in the same mountain in the summer, somehow I'm just going to be projected over the mountain. I don't know how that works. But that's a phobia. I wrote it down. I didn't want to take a look at the fears that I have. I don't want to appear weak, but I have those things. I have fear of financial institutions. I have fear of being alone. I have fear of financial insecurities. I have all that stuff. Write it down. I mean, when I'm saying it right now, I don't really have it right now except for the fear of heights. And let me tell you, every time that I try to fight, every time that I get in front of heights, I was with Don one time, and I make sure that I walk through my fear of heights. I don't want that thing owning me. That way, if I'm out on an outdoor adventure and one of the things is about heights, I sign up for that one. I took a job one summer as a guy that paints water towers on the outside, walking up 200 steps. Outside in Minnesota, painting the outside of the water tower. Because I don't want anything to own me. Now, it didn't work. I was just saying, it didn't work. I was awesome all summer. I felt like the fear was gone. I was like painting the tower, painting it like this. And next summer, petrified again. So then the next one, when I met my wife, Sandy, we were just dating, we jumped out of a plane. 12,000 feet, Sebastian skydiving. Yep. And that's exactly how I looked. I jumped out. I was totally fearless. But to get up to that point, you should have seen the video of me in the plane, completely white, begging for the person not to throw me out of the plane. Was I with you, Joe? Were we together? Just beg. It was awful. But at least I tried. I write that stuff down. Write it down. When I first came into the program, when I first came here down to South Florida, I'm just going to be honest, I'm putting my stuff out there. I was prejudiced. Okay, I come from an area that was not it didn't look like South Florida. Like, I don't know if you've ever heard me, I tell a story that in my high school, really, there was only Italians and Jews. That was it. Two different types of people that I ever knew were there. When I came into South Florida, I was like, wow, there's more people than I thought there were. And I was immediately prejudiced against people that I didn't know. And then as God would see fit, as he always does, I've been working in the swap shop for 18 years. He puts you exactly where you need to be. He's like, oh, you're going to prejudice? You're going to be working in the swap shop. 18 years. So I had to write that down. Now, when all that stuff is in front of you, it's painful, but you got to write it down. Now, here's the kicker. Here's the one that I could read from the book. In the 12 and 12, and you would actually like this. I don't like to read from the book as much as I used to. Of course, I read from the book, but not from the podium. But the 12 and 12, in step four is actually a great step in the 12 and 12. I'm not crazy about the 12 and 12 in step three. That's just my personal day. This is my personal story. I think the big book on step three is perfect. Doesn't need 1 second added. Doesn't need 1 second taken away. Not one line has been... It's perfect, step three. The prayer is perfect. That finishes with an amen. They mentioned you are at step three 2 times. It's page 62 and 63 of the big book, and it's perfection. And then it says now we're at step four. And then they write this chart with Mrs. Brown and Mr. Brown, and then they lose me. They lose me. You know, Mr. Brown didn't sleep with my wife. I'm not even sure what he's talking about. So they lose me. And, I mean, I don't think, you know, I'm just saying. You got Mrs. Jones, you got my employer and my wife, and Mr. Brown. And it's a good chart. It's a good chart. Believe me, you could do the four step right out of the big book. There's nothing you need to be added to that four step. But there's other things that are out there. The Hazleton guides with the columns. I like those. I don't think there's any reason not to use stuff that's already out there as long as it comes out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't use stuff that's made up by sponsors in the local area. I don't use anything that's made up that comes after the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The 12 and 12 is an addition to the Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't rewrite it. My sponsor, the first four-step that I did was out of Clancy's four-step out of California, and it was just 7 questions. Now, I guess that's what I needed at the time to ease myself into it. But now I like to go through the columns. And you're not going to hear a lot of stuff about the four-step from podiums because it's not exciting. No one's going to tell you about writing it down. But I do want to say this. If you have your stuff in front of you, you have your four different categories, which I've mentioned so far. I don't know if you've noticed one of them I've left out. Mm-hmm. What did I leave out?
Sex,
yeah. Yeah, just in case to see if you guys were paying attention. You see, Rob, the four step is good. There's a lot of sex in it, so it's also a good time. I leave that out because all of a sudden when you say four step, a lot of people think it's sex and sex misconduct and confession. And although confession is part of the fourth and fifth step, that's not what it is. It's you're walking around with all this baggage that you don't need. You're at the airport and you have 6 or 7 bags. And you know you can only bring on 2. And now they're even charging for those 2. So you know you're not bringing 7 and you're only going to Sarasota. You don't need 7 bags. But you're in there and you're carrying your 7. Marky, you can take 3. But everyone else, you can take 2 bags. And you got all these bags that you don't need, but you don't know how to get rid of them. You know, here's the funny thing about our character defects, our sins, anything, what do you want to call them, the 7 deadly sins. We don't even know that we need to get rid of them until we start writing them down. Well, as a matter of fact, and I'm not going to ask you to raise hands, but if I did, half the room, if you're really being honest, would raise your hand to this question. If I asked you when you came into the program, if any of you came here thinking that you only had a drinking and drugging problem, but that you didn't have any other problems, most of you would raise your hand. Because I certainly would have. I didn't come for any of the other stuff. That was like a track 2. I came for track 1. One was no more cocaine and no more alcohol. Character defects, that had nothing to do with me. I was only 23 years old. How many character defects could you have? Wow. That's what I was like. And then I saw God in the steps, and I was Catholic, and I'd been to church for Christmas and Easter, and I thought I knew God. So I came in here completely like blind. I didn't think I needed to do a moral inventory. I thought that was like if you were older and you were more serious about the program. And then I relapsed. And then I couldn't take a sober breath. And then all the things that I was doing inside of AA. You see, people, you hear that when we come in. Is it hot in here?
Yes.
I mean, come on. Whew. Whew. No, it's not just hot for me. It's hot for you. I don't want to just have the fan on me. I mean, I just think it's hot. Okay. So let me just go, bring it back. I just wanted to make sure it wasn't just me, because sometimes I just melt. Where was I? I know I was on the fourth step. Thank you, Don. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Tony knows. Tony knows, because we're retreads. We're retreads, which means we couldn't get it the first time. We thought we had it. Both of us, we had long-term sobriety. Thought we had it. We thought we attained. We thought we arrived. We didn't realize that we didn't. We only left. We thought we arrived. We thought that the steps were for you guys. We were excited when you were doing the fourth step and the fifth step. We were like, yeah, do it up. We thought it was awesome when you came to the meetings and started sharing about 6 and 7. To me, 6 and 7 was a paragraph in the big book. I didn't even think it applied to me. Now we take the book off the shelf. What? So I relapse. Because they tell you that when you come into the program, where's Todd? Where's little Todd? I can't even see you over there. When you come into the program, they tell you that you have to clean up the wreckage of your past, right? Listen to what I'm saying. Come back up here. You have to clean up the wreckage of your past. Anyone heard that? Clearing up the wreckage of your past. But what they don't tell you is a lot of us start creating wreckage in our present. A lot of us, we come into the program and we want to get sober, but we're pooping all over the rooms we're in. We're like poop, 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 and poop just building up all around us. We're like poop machines. And it's just building up all around us, and we don't understand why this stinks. We think the stink is you. We're like, wow, that you really stink. And you got poop all around you, and you're creating all this wreckage in your present, and you're doing four steps on your past, but your present is what's really stinking. So guess what I did? I created a lot of wreckage in my present. And I'm not going to talk about that tonight because that's for later on in the steps. That's the more advanced series. That's on step 7 and 6 and 7. But I want you to tell you, and I'm going to tell you in front of my wife, that I was arrested twice in sobriety. The first two times I was arrested was in sobriety. 3 years, 5 years arrested in sobriety. Now, let me ask you a question. Is that what they talk about, practicing these principles in all our affairs? I don't think so. I was practicing one principle. I was practicing two principles. One of the principles was I believed I was powerless over drugs. It's not even a principle, but it sounded like a principle. And the second principle was, if you asked me, I would love to tell you about it. So I had two things going on. I had a half a first step and a 12 step. But when it came to clearing out the wreckage of my present, I wasn't really big in that. So I'm pooping all over myself in AA, and I'm making enemies. And if you're a guy and you're a hot tempered and you're a big mouth, people just leave you alone. You know, it's not that people don't care, but people are not going to take chances on you if you're not willing to listen to people. I mean, people got lives. They got their own businesses. They got their own lives. They can't be spending all the time on you. And let me tell you, my home group, they did spend a lot of time on me. Wendy and my home group did spend a lot of time because I was young and maybe they thought I'd get it. And you know what? It took what it took. I did get it. But after being crushed and humiliated and losing everything that I owned, including my beautiful wife for a time. So I don't do a fourth. I do like a fourth and fifth step that was really half measures. And I told some of the stuff, but I didn't tell most of the stuff. And I still had all my baggage. So I come back. And my sponsor says to me, Jerry Baer from San Francisco, he says, I want you to start writing your stuff down. Now, he does the same thing to me that I just did to you. He doesn't mention the sex. He mentions the resentments, and he says, start with your family first, and then start with your institutions and all that kind of stuff. Write your resentments first. I'm good with resentments. I love resentments. Resentments actually make me feel good. Some people, they don't like resentments. I kind of love resentments. I mean, not now, I'm saying, but when I was writing them down, it kind of was it was like a free high for like a week. I'm writing down my resentments, Tony and Anthony and Vinny, writing them all down, getting to feel that stuff. Free juice. I was getting free juice on it. And I'm writing it all down in police departments, in the Fort Lauderdale Police Department, the Hollywood Police Department, the Miami Police Department, the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. I'm writing all that stuff down. And I got it all down on paper. And then he says, I want you to go to the next column, and I want you to write down why you resent them. And I like that one. I like the why I resent them, because to me, even though I wasn't sharing with anybody first, it was where I could get into some of the drama. That was the drama part. Let me tell you why I resent them. And I just started writing them out like I was telling it to you. I'll tell you why I resent them. And I would have the pen and paper. I'll tell you why I resent them. And I start writing like this. This is why I resent them. And I started writing them down. Now, one thing that my sponsor said with me, that in all seriousness, he said to me, I want you to get into a quiet place in the halfway house when you're writing this, where no one else is around. This is important. I want you to hear this, because I diverted to a little bit of comedy, but I want you to hear this. I said, I can't remember a lot of the stuff. The two things that he told me that really worked for me is he said, I want you to start with recent and then go back to the beginning. A lot of people start with the childhood. They never get out of the childhood. They're still in the fourth grade stuff. By the time the sponsor comes to do their fifth step, they're still talking about when Annie pulled their pants down. I mean, is it from a long time ago? My sponsor said, start with the stuff that happened in the halfway house. And I lived with Eddie, so I had like a whole 5 pages with that. And I was able to start recent and then go backwards. The other thing he said to me is, I want you to get on your knees and I want you to ask God to show you the things that you should be writing down. Ask him to open up your mind. Ask him to reveal the things that you need to be writing down. Because I just wanted to go with Steve's brain. Now, I don't know if you understand something. I had a brain that was, I started to do drugs out there that were on alcohol, hard alcohol. I started to do hard alcohol on the streets that were different than I had ever done before. So when I was 30 years old, I was doing alcohol that was just invented. And you know, stuff that was like potatoes 3 days before. That they were just making like over in Hollywood at the gin mill. Stuff that really wasn't alcohol. It was kind of like alcohol, but not really exactly alcohol. And it was like, you know, the worst type of alcohol. It was like grain, but not even, it couldn't even be grain. It was like goo. It was just goo. And so I'm doing that kind of stuff. So when I came in, I didn't have like clear head. Okay, I didn't have super clear head. So when it came to me writing all my stuff down from when I was younger and stuff that happened in my first sobriety, I was having a block. So my sponsor said to me, you need to ask God to illuminate that with you. I want you to go to the halfway house to a private place. Don't do it in front of your friends. You can't be writing your 4-step, he told me, while your friends are watching TV. It's not a TV thing. It's you go to a quiet place in your room, your house, wherever it is. You ask God to come into you and help you to write it down. And then you guess what you do? You get pen in hand, you get paper in hand, and you start writing. And you just write, and that's what I did. And I started writing, and different stuff came out. And then he told me that this one. And he said, I want you to write down sex harms caused others. Now, I thought it was a list of all the people I had sexual escapades with since I was like 11, since we played first base in the little clubhouse in the backyard. No, that's not it. It's stuff that you caused pain to other people. Stuff that you caused pain to other people. Not when you kissed and told and nothing like that, but when you were dishonest, when you caused another person to have harm or pain, or when you said, even when you told someone you'd call and you didn't, when you said that you were somebody that you weren't, when you made up that you were single and you didn't and you weren't. You know, when I used to tell people when I was in college that I was in the FBI, you got to write that down. You got to write that down. And you got to write all that stuff down, all the harms you caused others and all that kind of stuff, and you got to write it down. And so I did. And so I did. And then the last one was that there's sexual harms caused others, but then there's harms caused others. And this is a sad one. This is a sad one. Because if you live the life that we've lived, and you came from the places that we did, you've done harms to people that you can never go back, you don't know their names. You've met people in bars, you've met people in pizza shops, you've met people at Burger King's. And that person looked at you funny when you're on the Whopper line. And that's it. PJ knows. And there's a whole list of people that you've caused harms to them, but you can't go back and make amends to them. Now, not stuff that you do to people now, stuff that you would do people when you're an animal. And so I had to write that list down. And let me tell you something. When I started writing that list down, I started to see I wasn't such a nice guy. I wasn't so misunderstood. Because on black and white, you start to see who you really are, right? You're not Mr. Saint that just had a little drinking problem. You actually was a bad guy that when you drank, you became worse. Now, was I a good guy inside? Yes, of course. But I did bad things. And so I started writing that down. Now, why do I say all this? Because if that was the only step, if it was step one, which is we're powerless, that we know we need help. Step two, that we know we can't do it on our own, so there has to be a power greater than ourselves to help us with that. And step three, that we make a decision to that power that is going to come into our lives and transform our lives. And then step four, that we write it down. And then step six, that we ask God to remove the defects, there's a serious problem. Because if you just write it down, but you don't share it with someone else, that's the worst thing you can do. If your plans or your intentions is not to do a 5-step, don't do a 4-step. If you're going to bring up all that garbage and walk around with all that garbage and you're not going to lay it with another human being and then give it to God, don't do it. I mean, if you're not serious, then just don't be serious. If you haven't made a decision to turn your life and your will over to the care of God, just admit it. But don't write a 4-step, bring up all that stuff and not plan on doing a 5-step and letting it go. Because that is the worst type of program. That is nastiness. Then you're walking around with all this pain, this all this suffering, all this harms caused others, all this sexual stuff, all this fears, all this resentments, and then you don't give it to somebody, you don't ask God to take it away. Of course you're going to drink, or at least be miserable for a while. Of course you're going to be walking around the meetings and going, I'm doing the 4-step. Because you have no plan to do the 5-step. But if you know that you're about to give all that stuff away, and you know it's about to go, and you've been walking around with it for 25 years, 22 years, 35 years, 55 years, and you know it's about to leave, then you walk into the meetings and you're like, I'm doing the four step. And you gotta leave, because you know it's about to go. Because you're writing all this stuff down and you know it's about to leave. You feel a lightness about to come on. Now, I'm not saying that you're totally happy, joyous, and free. I'm not saying that all the promises happen, because that doesn't happen in the night step. But you start to see a light at the end of the tunnel. You start to see there's a possibility for you feeling better. But when you're caught up in that part of it, when you're caught up in that part of it and you haven't planned to let it go, that's where drink could happen again. Or at least misery. Now, I want to share something with Mike. Can I share what you told me about with your friend? 2 weeks ago, just in case you think this stuff is not important, because I see people sleeping in here, I see people nodding out, and I'm not sure if they're on medication or if they're just nodding out. But I want to tell you just how serious this stuff is. I want to tell you how serious this stuff is. And I promise if you come back next week, we're going to have the doors closed and there's going to be an air conditioning unit on. Okay, even if we have to put in our own 9-ton. I mean, church, can you put something in here? Can you do something here? I mean, we got people that build houses for a living. Can we have an air conditioning in the 12-step house? There's a young man 2 weeks ago that came with Mike. He came up to me, a big, good-looking guy, your size, Mike, tall, good-looking guy. He came up to me and Mike brought him over to me, introduced me, and he said, man, I loved it. I'll be back. And he was even talking about coming to the Bible study with us that we have tomorrow night. And he was a young kid. And Mike calls me 2 days ago. It was one of his closest friends. And on New Year's Day, he took a gun to his head a week after the meeting and blew his head off. 24, good looking, full of potential, great family, the whole nine yards. So when we get up here and we're talking about the steps, it's not because it's some exercise that maybe if you want to do it, you do it. It's because this thing is real. The disease of alcoholism kills. It's not something that we just talk about from another thing. It's something that's hitting home now. Okay? Jimmy, how many people have you buried? I can go around the room. And the people that are old timers will tell you, we've buried at least myself, and I'm not an old timer, at least I know of 12 that I've been to funerals, and I'm a new timer. If you talk to these guys that have been around a long time, it's in 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. Paul Lee says he's been to hundreds. So this disease is real. It's not out to just maim you, give you a little nick on the cheek, give you a little shin splint. It wants to see you paralyzed. It wants to see you dead. What it really wants to see is your family destroyed, your wives and your husbands leaving you, and it wants to see you homeless, walking federal highway, selling your soul. So when I talk about that four-step is imperative, I don't say it like imperative, like when the flight attendant, while you're on the ground, comes over and she says to you, would you like to pay attention to the exit strategy just in case the plane goes down, but it hasn't even moved yet? You got your iPod on, you're reading a magazine, this is what you hear? I'm talking about at 50,000 feet. 50,000 feet when the masts have already fallen and the pilot gets on and he says, we're going down and we're over the Atlantic. I'm about to give you the instructions for your life. iPods go off at that moment. And that's what we're talking about in the program of alcoholics. This is life and death. If you take it that seriously, I'm not saying we take ourselves seriously. Come over to Westside Men's Group. You'll see we don't take ourselves seriously at all. But we do take our program seriously. You take that part of your program seriously. Do a feeling and searching moral inventory. And then see if the rest of your life is not the best of your life. I'll see you guys next week.
Thank you for meeting with AA. I'd like to thank Joshua, the chair of the tradition.